Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're about to listen to an interview which our socios enjoyed in full 12 months ago. If you'd like to listen to these exclusive monthly big interviews on the day that they're released, it's time to join us. That means supporting us. It means the price of a pint per month. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Go now, join and become a socio. That means you'll get that extra big interview every month. And you'll also unlock our entire archive straight away, all for £2.99 a month. It's the best deal in town, baby. And we need you. Welcome to the Big Interview. I'm Graham Hunter. Welcome to the show. I went back to Derby County's training ground recently to speak to Shea Given. He's part of Frank Lampard's coaching staff, along with Jody Morris. And you can all see for yourselves that things are going well. A talented trio, a talented team. I first met Shea behind the scenes at Michael Carrick's testimonial at Old Trafford, liked him. And the fact that he was a top-class goalkeeper for so many years for several different clubs and also played elite international football for Ireland, allied to the fact that he's got an interesting life, is a characterful, funny, articulate man, meant big interview guest. It's a pleasure to be with our guest at the moment. It's just a pleasure to be back at your club because you've got one of the most sparkling, well laid out training grounds in England. We're at Derby County with Shea Given. Shea, thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Looking forward to this. I've read Any Given Saturday, which I thoroughly recommend to you, not just because it's Shea's book, but because It's damn good. You know, it's honest and funny, and the stories do some of the things we try to do here, which is lift the personalities out of football and show you, not in the one-dimensional way that some of the media choose to. So Any Given Saturday, go find it, go buy it, go read it. I would contend, from what I've learned in the game, that you don't survive at the elite level you did internationally and club-wise for so long, simply on talent. And therefore, tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm going back to growing up because, you know, the toughening up is a theme that comes up in our podcast a lot when we talk to footballers about how they were treated as junior footballers. You know, your love for your dad and your respect for your dad and what a character he is shines out of the book. But equally, in another anecdote that makes me laugh but also makes me shiver, when, I don't know if it was Kieran smashes the hi-fi. Kieran, you're right now. Sorry.
Good research, Graham.
Yeah, well, Kieran, I phoned him just.
He's still not owned up, actually, and it's whatever. What it's about?
He dodged all my calls.
Well,
I said, Kieran, I'm just doing my fact checking here. So the hi-fi comes in the house and gets broken, right? I mean, that's the basis of the story. I don't know what happens to it.
It came at Christmas. Obviously, Santa Claus brought it, and there was a glass door. You know, the old sort of stacking systems with the CD, the radio, the tape, cassette thing, and there's a glass front to it. It's only a couple of things, Boxing Day or the day after, and someone smashed the glass thing to keep the dust off and all that. Well, you can imagine my dad's reaction. He's obviously worked really hard to get the stereo for the whole family and brought us all in, sort of shouting and screaming at us. And no one would own up. It was literally no one. It wasn't me. It was one of them moments. Like that song, Shaggy, it wasn't me. Who broke the stereo? It wasn't me. Anyway, so it got to the point that no one was on up. He goes, right, that's it. Everyone out to the garage. And like the weather was Boxing Day or the 27th. So you can imagine. And we mean the garage. It was an open garage. It wasn't a garage with a door. It was bitter. Like someone's had pyjamas on. I think Marcus was holding one of the babies, actually, who wasn't sent to the garage, obviously, because it wasn't the baby that broke it. And he's like, you can put that baby down as well, because he was trying to rock the baby to get away from it. Like, under the baby, and he's looking after, put that baby down. You're out as well. So we're all standing in the garage for what seemed an eternity. It's probably only 20 minutes, but it was like, right, who done it? And still no one owns up.
Nobody broke.
And we've still got a WhatsApp group chat. And even now, obviously, this time of year, Christmas is not long gone. It's like, right, Kieran, maybe this is the year you want to own up to it. And he's like, I'm telling you, it wasn't me. Again.
So the concept of omerta. silence or death. Didn't originate in Sicily, it originated in Lifford. The reason I'm asking about that, because I think it tells beautiful stories about a past that's now long ago for you and for me, but surviving in football is hard. Football's a hard game. I think that, you know, for those who can't lift the lid and they maybe only see the games or the interviews in the flash, they don't know about the travelling, the tiredness, occasionally in everybody's life, maybe the bullying or the unfairness or an injury that's brutally badly timed. So to be this good this long, things, experiences like that and a multitude of others must have been a root cause of why you've succeeded, or is that, am I drawing too much about your foundation and your core?
No, I think most people would say that most people who have been at the top of their sport, whatever that may be, then they've had, you know, tough times in their life. I think not just growing up, whatever, but, you know, maybe relationships, or like my upbringing was very tough. I lost my mum when I was 4 to cancer. You know, that was very, very tough, and that, I used that as a strength throughout my career. And also, you know, we mentioned we can have a laugh about it now, but, you know, Gallagher and Spuds, and we actually, at the weekends on a Friday after school, we would go and sell them, and all day Saturday, knock on everyone's door around Lifford, fruit and vegetables, knock on the door, and you'd be going to sleep at night and you'd be hearing fruit and vegetables in your head, because that's every door you would do that to. Like, and I realise how hard a long day's work is, and then to have the privilege of playing football, and obviously now I'm a coach with Derby County, but to be still involved in football, I feel that, you know, especially when I was playing, was like, you know, I need to pinch myself at times, because to go from my hands and knees for 8 hours a day and not get paid, it wasn't paid work we're on. We had to do it to put for the food on the table for our family. Now to play football and dive about, you know, training, great training grounds and play in amazing stadiums around the world, not just in the Premier League, but around the world. And, you know, I've been very, very lucky. So I feel very privileged to have played football.
Did it at any stage change your relationship with, because what I meant was, it read to me as if you learned core values, good values. Tough, yeah, but I wasn't saying, oh, you know, poor you, like how tough it was. But it gives you steel, and it gives you judgment, and it gives you principles, I think. And not every kid's got the benefit of those. We see that in football. Yeah, it's actually quite difficult to replicate that if kids have come into football without that.
Yeah, it's difficult, because I've got my own kids now, obviously, and it's difficult to get that balance, like, because, you know, to get my son to wash my car now would be a bit of a chore, in a sense, you know, it'd be not a chore, but he'd want money for it.
He might take a couple of quid off
money
you.
Or something, yeah, or whatever. And it's like, that's probably the same with young players now, because they've sort of, as you say, you're at Derby County now, the amazing facilities we have here, that the underage teams have got, you know, 5 or 6 pitches up there. We've got an indoor pitch there, we've got the best gym, we've got the best of everything. And you know, it's difficult to sort of get the values across, maybe what a hard day's work is, but forgetting that a hard day's work, but forget how hard it is to get to the top of their profession. You know, they come in with all the new kit and everything, new balls, I don't know, just everything sort of laid on for them in a good way. But then sometimes they might lose out. The other side of the coin is, do they really feel, you know, once they sign that contract, do they sort of sit back and think, you know, now I've made it? But it should be the opposite. It should be, now this is where the work starts. This is where I really have to sit down and speak to coaches and whatever, don't know, fitness people, nutritionists, sports science, strength and conditioning, and really try and be the best that I can be, because, you know, life's short and the football career is even shorter. You know, the career, the span of a player, especially an outfield player, goalkeepers like myself probably can go a bit longer, but it's quite a short career and they have to make the most of it.
It feels to me as if, like, you know, you can't take a devilishly brilliant 25-yard free kick in the top corner unless you practice that 200 times. You can't struggle with the problems that life and football bring to you if you've never struggled.
The practice
of struggling is really important.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like struggling like pushed down, but like, I will beat this obstacle, I'll beat this life experience. If things are hard, I'll learn from it and I'll better myself.
Yeah. I think with my life, as I say, my upbringing and obviously the work and I say lose my mum, that's the life that I had growing up, so I don't really know anything different. But it was a tough life. It wasn't an easy life, and I feel that it has stood me in good stead. At that time as a kid, I was like, I wish it was like my mate up the road who you know, he's on his computer or he's playing whatever, or he's got his feet up watching TV, but that wasn't the case. We didn't have any choice. But I do realise now, looking back, that was one of the, you know, the core values, as you say, that I took to the next level in playing football and every day pushing myself to try and be the best every single day.
Well, to what extent did you ever look at the fans at stages in your club where either fame or wealth or maybe other colleagues can draw you away from the fans, but that concept, knowing what a hard day's work is and what 45 quid to come and watch a game is, did that stay in your mind? Or did, you know, was there a relationship between you having to do the fruit and veg and whatever as a youngster and knowing what the, you know, the people you're trying to entertain and play for? Did that relationship stay stronger?
I don't think that's ever changed for me personally, and I know a lot of players will have changed once they've got into a first team and once they've done well and they, you know, they feel they're above, you know, the normal person on the street, and I've never felt that. You know, I still go to the supermarket now and get the, you know, the shopping and for the nappies and baby wipes and food and whatever has to be taken into the house. I don't feel that, that someone else should be doing that. That's sort of my job as a father, and I don't feel that I'm above. And even when I was playing football, I was the same. I still went to the supermarket and got the groceries or whatever. So I, that probably comes a little bit green from my upbringing. My dad would be, you know, he would always have the door open for people. The door was never even locked, to be honest. You know, everyone was always welcome in our house as well. And maybe that's an Irish thing that, you know, everyone's quite relaxed, and everyone would you know, especially where I'm from, if you know people in England wouldn't wave and stuff or say hello walking by. If you walk by, they wouldn't even say hello to you in the street, whereas if in Lifford or in Donegal for that matter, you didn't say hello, they'd be like, what's wrong with him?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, I do.
Is you know, whereas if you went to London, probably, you know, the people would run over you nearly, not run over you, but they wouldn't say hello. Do you know what I mean?
There's a great Mass Report sketch about the reports of a northerner on the loose saying hello to people.
Yeah, no.
And there's a police advisor, but if somebody approaches you and says hello, he's got, you know, take a distance.
That is right, isn't it? But like, I've never lost that concept of people, you know, working hard, and you know, a good fraction of their money is going to go on a match ticket or traveling to an away game or, you know, a few beers or food at the game, whatever. They you know, a lot of fans, that's their life, that their football club is their life, and people maybe ask for autographs or pictures, and I would never, you know, turn that away or turn that down. I would be like, oh yeah, that's the least I can do, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But take me away from Lifford to a term that I'm going to use as if I know it, but I've just learned it today. Uh-huh. Take me to the Velvet Strand, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Take me to Portmarnock. Is there an armed robbery taking place when you're in a hotel in Portmarnock?
Yeah.
Can you talk me through that?
Is it random, innit?
Yeah.
It's funny because it's kind of like a split level. So there's the reception was, we're in a restaurant, like say we're sitting in here now, and above us was the reception. And there were stairs, just you know, people are listening, so they can't really hear. So the stairs up the reception were about, I don't know, 20 yards away from where we were sitting. And there were just the whole team was there, you know, the staff.
Who's we?
The Republic of Ireland full international squad was there in management, and it was like we just heard like shouting and sort of like quite loud, and we just thought, oh, it must be someone just having a row about something or whatever, we didn't know. And the next thing we heard a gun go off, like literally a shotgun going off, and we're like obviously there's a few, what the hell's that? People got under tables, people ran out, there was an exit sort of door to the other side of the room to go back down into the main part of the hotel to get away from it and stuff, and it was just so weird because we didn't know if the guy with the gun was going to just show he's come down the steps. Literally had a flight of steps to come down, and the full international team was there. So it was a bit scary, to be honest. And luckily, I think he just maybe we took some money from the takings and reception and shot off.
It was a full on robbery.
It was a full robbery, yeah.
For anybody who hasn't been near a shotgun, like, it's quite loud, eh?
Yeah, it's loud, yeah.
You heard it, right?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, there's only like a level between us, and it was open, sort of. So it was just, we heard it all right, so literally we're diving cover a little bit because we realised then that this is not just somebody having an argument.
This isn't a drill.
Reception. No, it's not a fire drill for sure, but yeah, it was a bit scary. And after, you know, when it all calmed down, obviously the Gardaí Síochána, which is the for people who don't know, the equivalent of the police in Ireland came out, and you know, you could see all the pellet guns in the roof. So we shot the gun into the roof of the reception. You could see all the people. Holes in the...
Yeah, yeah.
They frightened people, yeah. So definitely done that. Definitely done the trick.
Who had the quickest heels?
There was a few gone, and then a few people started taking their watches off. What if he wants her? Why? You know, there's just some mad stuff goes on in your head.
It's funny how your mind works.
Yeah, thinking,
it?
Maybe he's here. For us, where's the team at? Because we're just eating at that time. Maybe he knows. You know, you think he's done his homework.
He couldn't get a ticket
for a big game. You know, he's done all these different things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's come to get us. So people started taking their watches. People started running. It was just weird, but luckily enough, he wasn't there for us, thankfully.
Now, we've had the great good fortune of picking off quite a few of that team.
Mm.
Robbie Keane's been on this podcast.
Yeah.
Duffer's been on this podcast, very entertainingly.
Mm-hmm.
Kev Kilbane has been on it as well. Which of those that I've just named was nearly lost to the sea at Portmanet?
Did Duffer tell you that story?
Well, there's still many people who fear that he wandered off. You know how like the Beatles fans say when McCartney actually did die in a car crash?
Yeah.
Right? And it's been an imposter for the last 35 years.
Yeah.
There are some people who wonder if it's the real Duffer. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's brilliant. We used to do that a lot, actually, because we stayed in Portmanet, and for anyone who doesn't know Portmanet, it's right on the beach, the hotel.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
So it's beautiful, yeah, it's beautiful, but you can imagine the sea is not so warm. It's not like...
I'd say cold.
It's not next to Barcelona where it's nice and warm, but it's really cold, to say the least. But what we usually, you know, this is before ice baths and stuff. Our ice bath was the sea. So a lot of the times after training, the lads would go in, and Duffer was probably one of the best professionals I've ever worked with, to be honest, and he would religiously go in after training every day, you know, for that recovery to get ready even for the game the next day or for another training session. But he would go in with the headphones on, he would go in with a coat on and you know, shorts or whatever. And I think some woman was walking her dog along the beach at the time or something. And she shouted like Duffer, and Duffer had music on or something. He's turned around, he's given, don't be silly, I don't know. He didn't even want to listen to her. It was kind of like he was in his own zone. And you can imagine how cold, because I've been in there myself, how cold it is. The last thing you want to do is have any conversation with anyone. You're just trying to get in there
and get it done and get out.
So she's obviously took it out. He's gone to, like, obviously take his own life.
He's going to end it all.
Yeah, he's gone because he's got looks. She can only see, you can't see he's got shorts, so she can only see up to his waist, like, and he's got his full clothes on, and he's just walking into deeper and deeper into the sea. So she's ran off and called the local Coast Guard. And next thing, so Duffer's always been, I think we normally do about five, ten minutes max in the sea and back up to the hotel, showered and that. And by the time the bleeding Coast Guard came in the helicopter...
There's nobody there.
So that makes it even...
He's possibly
there. You think he's gone.
Yeah.
So up and down the thing we, for it seemed, must be a good couple of hours looking for him and then realised, obviously, I don't know how long it took him to realise it was actually Duffer who's tucked up on his bed this time after a nice warm lunch, and he's probably watching a film or something in his bed getting ready for training.
Red blood cells pulsing through the muscles.
I know, yeah.
Ready to rip a defender.
We may even looking out the window thinking, wonder what that helicopter's doing up and down the coast there, because it was just outside our hotel.
I feel, just for the record, though, it's a beautiful anecdote. We need to say Friendly doesn't know him. He's worth looking for.
Who, Duffer?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Let's make that.
He's one of our best players, like, so I don't know if the woman realised it was Duffer or she couldn't tell, but...
Ah, so if it had been somebody else in the squad, she might have just
me.
Let them go.
If it was me, she would have just let me go, yeah.
I wasn't fishing for that one, but I hear you.
She wouldn't waste the petrol on the
it's
helicopter.
The same with us, too. If it was him, they'd go in the
stretch. Wouldn't even made the phone call.
What took you so long?
Yeah.
Which gives rise to, not more serious, but a slightly more difficult question in that I don't want to be hypocritical. I live life quite fully, energetically. I feel that the night and day are equal in terms of their importance.
Yeah.
So I like to go out.
Mm.
But when you spend the serious part of your profession interviewing footballers, managers, sometimes travelling with them, and in later life in Spain where the doors are more open than the Premier League was, seeing them off the record and doing the things that used to happen in this country between journalists and footballers, because it's still a little bit more relaxed in Spain... You grow up, particularly as somebody who was born in Scotland, you grow up with this strange idea about what drink's for, and you see, I certainly grew up in an era where, for example, and he's been in this series too, Walter Smith definitely had a Wednesday policy of the team that drinks together, stays together, wins together. Now, it's not as simple as times have changed in terms of our sports science, what we put in, what top footballers put.
Yeah.
But given that that has changed so much, and given that I think you've always believed that there's a natural boost, a natural boon to a group of elite footballers playing together and having fun together, and then taking some of that onto the training ground and the pitch, how do you maintain the idea, the central idea of that, without it including alcohol in the modern game? Listen,
yeah.
Every rugby player, golfer, doesn't matter, they can drink. But to the extent that we know was the case, and that you had fun doing in your career, and that I do in my life, how do you sort of suck out the juice of the benefit and not have the physical bodies of the footballers suffer?
It's difficult, I think, in the modern game, because as you say, I think, especially in the Premier League, different countries might be different. But the intensity of the game, and even in the Championship, the level we're at the minute, the intensity and the amount of games, like if you look at our fixture list for the next 6 weeks, you'll see every 3 days, near enough, we've got a game. So
Relentless.
So
we're not just talking about performance, we're talking about recovery too.
Yeah, that's the big thing, is recovery, especially when the games come so thick and fast. But the other side of the coin is, I would say, and I have said in my book, which you've probably read, is I think there is a time and a place for the group of the players to get together, have a few beers, unwind, have a bite of food, get together, have a bit of crack, you know, and then talk about it and get to know each other. As a sort of looking from the start of my career, for example, for Ireland was when I was 19, and that's a long time ago now. But like you weren't allowed to stay, and it wasn't like it was the whole squad, the 23 men was no one was like, well, I'm not going out. And then when I finished my career, which isn't that long ago, Ireland, it was like, and this is just the way the whole thing started. No one was going out. It was just you were all in the hotel. And the thing I got of that probably because I'm a coach now, was there'd be some players in that squad that I never really got to know, because I would just see them on the training pitch. So we'd go on the training pitch, the bus from the hotel, the training pitch, see them on the training pitch. We'd train and then get back in the bus. Yeah, have a bit of lunch. They go back up to the rooms and then see them again the next day of the training, you know. Whereas previous squads, or you know, maybe generations before, would be, we'd train and then we'd have a few beers, we'd get together, we'd have the crack, we'd be playing cards, we'd be, you know, there'd be no real computers going on, or like now they're all, I don't know, FIFA and PlayStation, and I'm never into this kind of stuff. But you know, instead of having a few beers at the right time, don't get me wrong, I think there's you need to have had it at the right time, but instead of having a few beers, now they're all in a room playing Fortnite, or all got their headphones on playing FIFA and all this kind of stuff, and I'm like, then I felt maybe it's time to retire. But it was kind of like, it's a shame in one way, but I understand that the way the game's gone a little bit. But I still believe and I still think there is, for example, if you didn't play till a Saturday and you met up on the previous Saturday, I still think the Saturday or the Sunday of the previous week would be still a time, I believe, you could still get the lads together and let them let their hair down a little bit to get that togetherness.
So I think people who are fans of the game but maybe don't get inside the game forget that some players can be shy. And might not come out of the room for reasons other than just playing on a computer or whatever. And I remember Gary Neville talking about in Euro 96, I think Terry Venables' assistant was Ted Buxton, and Gary certainly said that one of the assistants knocked on doors and said, you must come down. You know, there's some food and there's a couple of glasses of wine, but you have to bond, because some of you players don't know this guy and some of you are new.
You know, I still believe, I mean, you live in Spain, so I mean, I know a few players are going to Spain the night before a game, there'd be a bottle of wine on the table. Or maybe even sometimes pre-match, and they'd be encouraged to have a glass of wine. You know, before a game, Pepe Reina has 3 or 4 beers religiously the night before a game, because that's his routine, that's what he wants to do. And if you said that in England, they'd be thinking, oh, that's scandalous, you can't be doing that. But, you know, I think there's a balance.
A lot of the Mediterraneans, and I'm speaking about myself here, not everybody else, have the word stop in their vocabulary.
Yeah.
Now, many Celts, I can't speak for the English, don't.
Yeah.
One means three, 3 means 10.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of footballers, certainly when I was growing up, who could do that.
Yeah.
And therefore, the idea of a couple of beers, like for example, Fernando Hierro and Ivan Campo, when they moved to Bolton, would go out to Harper's in Manchester for a beer the day before the game.
Yeah.
They both did that for a couple of beers and a chat with the owners and their friends and whatever, knowing that if they did that in Spain, they'd have been castigated. You know, they'd been held up to ridicule, not drinking wine with a meal, but going out to a pub the day before a game, would have been not the done thing. And in England, they found the balance that you're talking about.
Yeah.
We can do that, and it's actually quite good for us, and it relaxes us. And so middle path and balance is obviously important. I accept that. Hopefully you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios 12 months ago. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day that they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 a month, you will get an exclusive big interview, plus regular mini-documentaries, not only all ad-free, but all featuring me, and bringing you interesting, funny, and sometimes scandalous things from Spanish football.
Go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. That means that once you join, you will have a treasure trove of interviews with funny, elite, interesting, revelatory, top-class footballers. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast. You will help to keep us on the road, interviewing people and sending that content for your delectation. If you go to the gym, you'll be slimmer. If you've got a dog, he or she will thank you. If you've got a TV, you can turn it off and listen to this instead.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.